Right, folks, this is Level Up. Welcome, everybody, to Level Up. It's a new but familiar platform. You've been with me. You've seen how I think and sometimes what you wish I didn't say. I'll say it out loud. But today, I'm excited to...
I can hear the aircon. Please switch it off.
Oh, my God. Do you know I'm a lady of a certain age?
Should we restart?
All right, in 5, 4, 3, 2.
Welcome to Level Up. It's a new iteration of a familiar conversation. My name is Phume Mashego, and I have got some exciting guests today, and we're starting and setting the tone for 2025, because we start 2025 after what I was saying to Timothy a little bit earlier, it's kind of like a global Saturn return was what 2024 was, right? Like half the world's population is voting. People are deciding who they want to go forward with, who they don't want to go forward with, what we stand for as nations and as people, and who is going to lead us in that way. So we start 2025 with a second Donald Trump presidency. We have a new version of GNU here in South Africa. We have AI going apeshit with DeepSeek, which has been last week's big buzzword, and a ceasefire in Gaza and Lebanon, and an ongoing war in Ukraine. It's a lot. But I have you here, gentlemen, to help me and the audience think through some of the things that may not be grabbing headlines, but we should be thinking about going into this year. And with me in the studio, everybody's friend here at Podcast Party, yes, we know
I'm,
you.
I'm Timothy. The big brother. I'm getting old now, so I'm like the elderly brother. I used to be the young brother.
Like a distinguished older gentleman, I'd like to say. We've got a friend of Podcast Party, Burning Platform before, and I think he's a bit of an undercover conspiracy theorist. Because the stuff that Xavier says...
Definitely on Twitter.
And an absolute pleasure to have Mr. Dion Chang with us, who is a, he says, self-confessed cage rattler. But he is actually the preeminent watcher of trends here in South Africa and globally. So thank you, gentlemen,
thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
It's a lot of big things. Where do you want to start? I know you, being an American, want to talk about number 45 and 47. Number 45 and number 47.
I'll tell you something that's freaked me out. 2 days ago, I got an email that we have to wash one of our sites. So one of the things that people are not aware of is Trump's first term was quite successful for South Africa and Africa. He instituted an organization called Prosper Africa that aggregates 17 U.S. organizations such as USAID, et cetera, to drive investment and trade on the continent, advanced shared prosperity. That's a Trump policy. Mm-hmm. And so one of the things that we saw under the Biden administration, that the moral agenda underneath Prosper Africa started to take shape, where it was like, let's bring black people together. Let's think about inclusion. And so all the conversations we've had around diversity and inclusion, they've been asked to be wiped off. It shook me.
Really?
Yeah.
Why though? Because this is Trump.
Because he wants to focus on first principle, just let's get investment trade done instead of focus on the moral angle. And there are a lot of people who believe that's more effective. And, you know, in 2022, I flew to D.C. for 3 days. 3 days, came back. Actually, 2.5 days. I flew to Washington, D.C. for a U.S.-Africa Leader Summit. Mm-hmm. Under that summit, the U.S.-Africa Diaspora Council was established that looked at the moral agenda. How do we bring African-Americans, Africa and America together? First day of office, Trump canceled it on his executive, when his executive order rolled out. He canceled it. Because he wants to focus on. So this is some of the things you can expect for 2025. I mean, he's got some of the most extraordinary leaders he's appointing to the Africa desk, such as Peter Pham, Joe Fultz, Rudy Atala. And these people have a deep, deep understanding of policy and rigor and how to do business in Africa. So it's going to be really, really interesting. It's a shift from moral to practice.
I want to talk more about his obsession with Greenland, but we'll come back to
okay.
that.
Okay, sure.
Top of Dion, you laugh. What? Why do you laugh at that?
Because I think, throughout 2024, but I think throughout most of the career of Trainspotting, I just read things that you think, you can't make this up. And Trump's first week is just like, okay, there's just more of that, you know, we'll change, call the Gulf of America, only in America, actually.
and on Google Maps. Greenland,
yeah, and Google Maps, yeah. But just, yeah, there's last year's, we do the state we're in every single year, and we theme it every year. And last year's theme was about things that look a little bit hallucinogenic. It feels like you're going into a twilight zone. And I think we just kind of stayed there. We kind of fallen in between the cracks and we can't get out the twilight zone. And I think 2025 is going to be just more twilight zone stuff.
Do we need Dan Aykroyd's voiceover?
Very scary.
And for you, what are the big things?
There's too many, you know.
Pick one.
Me, I got to say, Trump, we expected it. We knew it was going to be more drastic than the first term of Trump. But we didn't expect it to be this drastic. The sanctions, I don't know if you saw the war he had while he was on the golf course last Sunday with Colombia. So Colombia just decides we're not going to accept our illegal aliens back. You keep them. Mm. No, Trump said, okay, fine. 25% on all your imports into America. So they were like, okay, all right. And then he got more crazy. All while he's on the golf course, eh?
Yeah.
He's not in office. He's not in the Oval Office. He's not somewhere in a government building. No, he's on the golf course in a golf cart. And he's busy tweeting and these things are going. And Marco Rubio is busy sorting this out. And within, I think it was 6 hours, a span of 6 hours, he changed Colombia's policy. So we're back to the age. And then we look at the Paul Kagame and Cyril Ramaphosa thing. We're back to the age of mean tweets.
If people haven't seen it, yesterday was, you talk about the Twilight Zone. Dion, I was astounded to watch a public spat from what is essentially the official Twitter accounts of two presidents on the continent having a go at each other. And I did think this is what Donald Trump has like allowed us to become, because that's what Donald Trump did, right? Yeah, sure. He's made this okay. And I'm very interested to hear from your perspective, Timothy, because this is your world, right? Mm. Behavior, the psychology of the things we say and exposed to, and how that is affecting what we should be looking at and affecting the psychology of people going into
Yeah, let's look back from like 2006, 2007 when Facebook really became a thing, around 2008, somewhere along there, to now. If you think about it, the average person is on multiple platforms. Hmm. You know, you'll take even the most serious professional is probably on LinkedIn. I mean, if they're a bit older, they probably have Facebook and if they're trying to be cool and engaged, they probably even have TikTok. So you got all of these platforms that have very similar algorithmic design. And these algorithms have one agenda, and that's to keep you glued into a space where your values circulate to promote dopamine engagement, which is basically gluing you to your highest values or your perceived highest values. And so if I'm interested...
Highest values. Yeah, I would have thought our more base instincts.
Yeah. Well, they result in... Those instincts you speak about result in some sort of value that you relate to, right? Mm-hmm. And so let's say, for example, you are interested in crushing DEI, right? Mm. That is your mission right now. Like this thing has to go no matter what. So the algorithm is going to say to you that... You're part of a community that is crushing DEI, and you're going to feel emboldened. You're going to feel empowered and so forth. And so what Trump has done is created this extraordinary sense that if, you know, the algorithm designers, people like at Stanford, the guys who helped create Instagram, they have a term called, you put hot triggers in the path of motivated people. BJ Fogg's lab at Stanford. He says, you put hot triggers. So DEI is a hot trigger. You put it in the path of motivated people. Trump is a master of driving that type of thinking. You don't even think, maybe I should leave that algorithm and see what other people are interested in. You are literally...
You're triggered.
You are an ambassador of this algorithm.
True.
And what's important about this is this. If you are a person who believes anything deeply, step back for a moment and consider... And nobody's going to do this because it just takes energy. Nobody wants to expend energy in an uncertain world where there's a twilight. You feel like you're in a twilight zone. You want to feel safe amongst the community. That's why it's very hard to leave and think critically in this space. And so Trump becomes the senior ambassador, and then all of us are junior ambassadors of our algorithms.
Elon Musk. You know?
So what does that mean? What does that mean? We should be like logging off more. What does that mean, particularly in the conversation that we're having now, in terms of big data and the computing of big data, as we watch with all of the chips coming out, and what AI is learning in that space?
I find it interesting because, you know, I agree with what you're saying. You're tempted to pick those hot triggers, like now with South Africa. Suddenly South Africans that were not defending SANDF for years said it's a dysfunctional entity are now defending it because Rwanda wants to attack us. But, you know, it's interesting because critical thinking has gone out the window. People don't think about what they're following. And yeah, I can agree with Trump. I'm a fan of Trump, been for many years. But this whole Greenland thing, I don't see the sense in it. I believe like Greenland should be independent for its own people, the traditional people of Greenland. I believe it should cut ties with Denmark as well. But now why would Trump want to take over Greenland?
For a conspiracy theorist, I can't believe you're not seeing this. Guys, no, is there
like
a war?
Minerals,
fine, is there a world war? Do you see an escalation of the aggressions, tariffs, China, America? America's internal woes, a recession in the whole world. Does this sound like 1930-something? And is Greenland the perfect launch pad to fight China, to send weapons of mass destruction in China's direction? What do you think? Are we going to see a war? Are we going to see a large-scale war?
So one of the things that we've put into this year's state we're in is so last year we started to see the whisperings of conscription around the world. So a lot of countries starting to do conscription.
Takes care of unemployment.
Yeah, in the Scandinavian countries, they've like gone one step further, like issuing books and how can you survive and all of those things. On the other side of the fence, the 1% or 0.5% are all investing in bunkers, okay, for the euphemism is the event. So be that a kind of a desert electrical storm that takes out the whole internet system of the world, a new virus
like that one
crazes.
Day.
Yeah. So you've got the 1% buying bunkers, and it's like, so where do we do it, in Alaska or like in New Zealand? What's the most remote place that's going to be doing that? And in the Philippines, you're also starting to see. People, and that's what's interesting. So the warfare's also changed a lot. So yes, we're preparing for war, but in the Philippines specifically, they are recruiting young tech citizens in case of cyber attacks. So those are specifically for cyber warfare. So people are preparing for war in very, very different levels and in very, very different ways. So it's a really interesting kind of...
So is a war coming? Okay.
I would say... We're not going to see a proper war, I think.
What is a proper war?
No, like when you look back at any world war, it started with a single, World War II, World
War I.
They're
only two.
Yeah. But those are the big ones. And if you look at those two, it started with an invasion. We've had that already. Ukraine didn't trigger a world war. Taiwan, it could. It could because of the, you know, the dependency on chips that are made in Taiwan. If China takes it away, the West will suffer. So the West is going to try and defend that. But I don't think they'll be successful in it. We've now seen a major shift with Chinese technology and Russian technology now outpacing the Western technology. You know, we've seen the performance of German tanks are not up to the standards we thought they were 20 years ago. They're not surviving on the battlefield in Ukraine against Russian tanks. We've seen drone warfare just explode. So a world war might not be the way we know it in World War II, where thousands of men are conscripted, landing on beaches, fighting battles in cities. It might be drone warfare. It might be AI. It might be cyber attacks. I think those are all more realistic. So that changes the face of what we consider a world war. It might just be a blackout, which we used to in South Africa. So it's fine.
Donald Trump will have an Iron Dome. He said no, as so much yesterday.
Just to take on what Zev is saying is America's also been very, very nervous. In the last year or so, China's been shooting up a lot of stuff into space.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of things that are, so it's kind of space warfare as well. So you can like shoot out satellites, you can do that. So it's kind of space to ground kind of communication systems that you can do that. But there's always two sides of the coin. So on the one hand, America's saying, oh my God, we're really, really worried because it's just like, it's outrageous the number of things that China are shooting into there. And then the Global South, South Africa included, have just signed MOU with China for a new space station. So we're like, everyone's going, yeah. So, you know, we've actually now, we're also coming to the space party and we're doing these things. So, you know, when they always say, yeah, when you look at media, look at different sides of the story.
My favorite topic is in local politics is, are we finally going to have a president that steps up? What do you see? What do you see? We are, again, because elections happen in cycles, we've just gone through the national election cycle, but coming up next year is the local government elections. And what happens this year is going to be very critical to how people show up at those polling stations. And what do you see in that space?
Well, if I'm honest with you, I don't think
I would hope you've been all this time.
I'm always honest. But anyway, you know, if we look at it, and the dynamics, we now pass the 6-month point of the GNU. And while private sector, and you guys can maybe resonate with that, is very optimistic about the GNU. They love the GNU. For them, it means opportunity. It's great for business. There's a lot of stability in the GNU. And this is why John Steenhuisen went high and then
really?
Low. Very quickly, he was put down. But you know, there's a lot of stability in this GNU, but when you look at the effects on the population, a lot of people have already started losing faith in this GNU being a big change maker in South Africa. So with the elections coming up for 2026/2027, because it might be towards the end of 2026 rather than the start, with that, I don't think we're going to see a lot of difference. I think we might see GNU 2.0, but in municipal versions. Which doesn't bring a lot of stability. But the biggest issue is our politics is simply not youth focused. The GNU has been a collection of older men and no youth leaders. So there's no one speaking to the South African youth about issues that affect them. You know, they're all prosperity driven. Oh, we're going to build the economy. We're going to end unemployment. But what does ending unemployment mean to a 20-year-old?
Well,
you know?
That, in fact, I think that is the one thing that we should be talking to young
Correct.
People about. And I'd like to hear your take, Dion, in terms of the trends on the ground. So we've seen this year, Cyril Ramaphosa's pen has been very busy. He did not do what Donald Trump did and have like a signing ceremony, but he's signed it. NHI, signed. Bella Bill, signed, now act. You know, all of those bills that he's now signed into law, and the impact that they would have just in terms of private sector business in South Africa, and how me as one little person who doesn't have a medical aid, who's got a child in a what does it mean? Yeah. You know, what is that?
Well, I want to just, you know, support what Zev is, because we, just before the elections last year, which year are we now? So we did a little project called 30-30-30. So a small grouping, but 30 conversations with under 30s, 30 years into democracy. Oh. And we asked them three sets of questions. One was personal. So where do you live? What do you spend your money on? All of those kind of things, social media. The second one was more about professional, because we do a lot of future of work. What is your attitude to work, your career, all of those kind of things? And then the last one was public. your civic duty, where do you feel about that? And then when you, which is what we like to do, join all the dots, it was really, really fascinating. So from the personal thing, you found that matriarchy was really, really strong for young people. So the role model that stood out the most from all of the people that we spoke to was grandmothers. So grandmothers, but then aunties, everyone in the family, which spoke a lot, unfortunately, about absent fatherhood in South Africa. So your matriarchs were the real leading kind of, those were the role models. When you kind of bring that into politics, it was exactly what Xavier was saying. There's just old people that don't have any clue about what our problems are. There's nothing there. But possibly if there was a really charismatic, vibrant female role model, that would happen. But there's a gap for that. There's no really, really strong female role model that comes out in politics.
Speaking of strong, I'm going to come back to you, but very interested to hear your take, particularly in the very muted, almost smacked down, or bitch smacked, as it were, Julius Malema, who has been, for a very big part of the past 10 years, the voice of those young people in South Africa. Mm. What's your... Is he going to be quiet for the rest of the year? Is he done?
You know, it's interesting. I was on a flight from New York to visit my parents down in North Carolina. It's about an hour and a half flight. And I spoke for an hour and a half to this guy sitting next to me who was from Rwanda. Mm. Born in Kenya, but lived in Rwanda, was studying in the States. And he asked me, "What's going on with Malema?" And he said to me that he felt that Malema had spent too much time thinking about his role in the diaspora and across Africa and not enough focus on South Africa and how he was a hero to those outside of South Africa. Yeah. And I thought that was interesting because it's going to be, for me, it'll be interesting to see if he decides to pivot and become that Africa voice, recognizing that he may not be able to retain. So if he goes kind of the hero's journey, he collapses in South Africa, but builds and then comes back. I'm not sure.
Emerges.
Yeah.
Transformed on the other side. Well, interesting that you say that, because we haven't seen him on the platform. He's very, very used to be very, very active on X. And for a long time now, since the departure of Floyd, he's been very, very quiet. You haven't seen a lot of him. And yesterday he had a lot to say about what's happening in the East DRC.
Okay.
And so when you say that,
yeah, maybe that's
fascinating.
You know, it's, and I'm going to get a lot of heat from this, from anyone. When we look at Madiba and we see him before the Rivonia trial, and then we see him after the Rivonia trial, one of the key successes was the ANC's movement outside of South Africa. You know, that was a key influencing factor in the fight for South Africa. And I think, to what you're saying, if Malema chooses that path, he could actually emerge the hero in about 10 or 20 years. That's a very realistic notion if he plays his cards right.
By which time he too will be an old man.
Yeah, but it's fine because in Africa, we appreciate old leaders for whatever reason. I don't understand it. To your point, Dion, you know, PMG released a report today about the diversity in parliament. The party with the most female leaders in parliament, now these are the people passing our bills, making decisions for us, is ANC. None of the other parties come close on the percentage. In fact, the women MPs in the ANC outnumber the men by a whole 17 seats, which is almost the same amount as some opposition parties have.
It's more than a whole lot of others.
You know what I mean? So it's not to say we don't have female representation. There's a very... And it's terrible because, like, women in South Africa don't get the credit they deserve. A lot of women are the breadwinners in the households. It's not men, you know? So silently, South Africa is a matriarchal society. But, you know, the optics of it is we are a patriarchal society and we keep electing these men who are not too good on leadership, including Malema.
But I'll still... go ahead and say we haven't, so we might have those in numbers, but there's not a charismatic leader.
Correct.
that is going to really inspire the youth about that, because I think even though you have that high number of female politicians or representatives in the ANC, they kowtow to the party line, which is patriarchal. Correct. Anyway. Mm-hmm. So you're still having a patriarchal system that you're under the thumb of that. Mm-hmm. So you don't never emerge from that.
Yeah, and I've been thinking a lot about how culture is playing a role in that. You know, if you think about, if you're a woman and you in your 40s and starting to think about political leadership and leading at the absolute highest level in this country, you know, how is your culture back home supporting you, you know, versus sort of almost sabotaging you by saying, go and play this role during the weddings and during the funerals and so forth. So your ecosystem, your personal cultural ecosystem is, if you're a man, it's pushing you forward constantly.
Yeah.
Telling you to get on the front line at everything. If you to be leading at funeral, leading everywhere. Whereas it's possible that it's hard to build momentum as a woman when so many spaces you operate in are telling you that you have other roles.
But on that point, we now see in a modern America that has had a black president already. So that barrier is broken. We now see in modern America skip the option of a female president twice, which is a ridiculous notion if you think about it in 2024.
Yeah.
Now, this is one of the most.
I just know that we've had the right woman.
Listen, except I don't know if Kamala wanted I don't know if Kamala wanted it for herself as much as everybody else wanted it for her. Right? I don't think. First of all, Donald Trump, guys, is a media guy. He is a machine.
Yes,
and he's watching, he's a master. He's a master.
He doesn't get caught up in the moral angle of what he's doing. He's just doing what he knows works.
I read a thing recently about the big issues, right? So the big issues in America, inflation was a big issue, and they said to him, "Inflation is a big issue," and he said, "Guys, inflation. I can't see inflation. Can't see inflation. I'm not making that my thing. But people can see a wall.
Yeah. Right?
So when you talk about a wall, when like the masterstroke that eating cats and dogs, right? Masterstroke.
Yeah.
As abhorrible That's as it was for training. Some of us.
His
right?
apprentice training.
Yeah. He knew it. That thing just you know, catches the psychology of people. It's the trigger.
Yes.
In the past of willing participants.
But you know, I don't think we're giving enough credit to the Iron Man in the room. You know, you've got Elon Musk, who he's a global thing. He's not just American now. And I think you guys might agree. If it weren't for Elon Musk and the Platform X, Trump might not have won so well. Because what he's done is like, it's a huge, it's huge. I don't think any president has had this much approval behind him. So I think we don't give enough credit to Elon
those
Musk.
Numbers, you know, those numbers, though, in the popular vote, we talk often about what America's very weird voting system is, right? Weird. But looking at the numbers, down to the very base of the numbers, I mean, Donald Trump's numbers are just 1.5 million more than Kamala. So 1.5 million, come on, in a 360 million population, 1.5 million is like this.
But you've got some states that are...
I don't know if I buy that nonsense. But I do want to have this conversation, which is we've spoken about the big things. We've spoken about the global. We've spoken about the AI. On a more individual level, on a more personal level, what are the big trends, things we should be looking out for, kind of putting in the front of our brain rather than the back of our brain in 2025?
So there's two for me. One is just a continuation of what we're talking about a matriarchal society. And so what we've been tracking for a long time is the change of social contracts. So post-COVID, we've done a change of a work contract. Okay, flexibility, work from home, there's still a whole let's come back to the office. No, we don't want to come back.
I will. People are like, going back to work.
It's just like, okay.
Or the new normal day.
Yeah. So, but the genie's out the bottle. So, so that contract. But then what interests me really is a real shift of – it's a demographic social contract. So when you're saying women have been – there's just been this ceiling. Okay, you break this glass ceiling, but it's just cracked. It's, you replace it again. So there's – it's been growing for the past 2 years, just getting stronger and stronger and stronger is the child-free movement. of women.
Okay. Mm,
so
huge.
Not on the African continent. So we're still procreating merrily, and we're a very young continent, but all around the world, especially East and then North America, I mean, declining populations, aging populations, Japan,
South Korea. You know,
and none of the incentives the governments are giving for people just to go and play hook. Honky ponky at the night, you know, it's like 4-day work week so you can date, you can, you know, we'll sponsor this, we'll give you cash if you have a child. None of that's working. So it's a very interesting kind of shift of that. And what you're starting to see is also the realignment of what is a nuclear family. Mm. So the nuclear family has completely changed, which is why Trump's, there are only two genders and all of those kind of things, that's going to be a really big like
culture
issue,
shock.
Culture shock there happening there. Because it's been changing and those traditional roles and around the world, especially in emerging economies, women are getting more education. So they're going, I ain't being pregnant and barefoot in the kitchen anymore. So I'm going to delay having children. And young millennials and older Gen Zs who are now the new parents are also saying, the world's really screwed up. I'm not bringing a child into this world.
The environment
is, you know, gone to hell. There's no – and also I just can't afford a child. So I'm not going to bring a child. So the really interesting thing, and I'm hoping that the commission will go through, is I've been commissioned to write a book on the explosion of the pet parenting boom around the world.
Mm. Okay. Yeah.
So how's this for a stat? This is just like we pick up little signals and just say this is proof of pudding and this is where we start. South Korea, you mentioned South Korea, 2023, a manufacturer of buggies, prams, sold more pet prams than baby prams in 2023. That should tell you something about it. And they said by 2023, the global pet industry is going to be worth $363 billion globally. It's just going.
So an interesting development now is filling malls since COVID has been very difficult in South Africa. Mm. And one of the most popular brands now are, I forgot their name, but they're pet shop.
Absolute Pets.
That's
by Woolworths.
So that one is exploding. So wherever, you know, it's becoming very hard to fill occupancy in certain places, but most community shopping centers now have Absolute Pets.
Yes.
But Baby City is declining dramatically. And Baby City used to be almost everywhere. I don't know if you were around Joburg in the 90s. I know you were around, but I mean, like, were you around Joburg North in the 90s? We had Baby Cities everywhere. Yeah. When I was young, I remember you couldn't go to a shopping center without a Baby City. Now, Toys R Us and Baby City is like heavily declined.
Yeah, Toys R Us had a global, it wasn't just in Joburg.
We had a lot of toy stores, like, when I was younger. And now there's not a lot of toy stores.
I've been down some very weird rabbit holes about the pet industry. So on the luxury side, because now your fur babies, you don't have kids to school fees or anything, so you just plunge all your disposable income there. So I've uncovered private airlines. So one is called Bark Air, Gulf 4 and 5. They fly you and your pet. I said, those airlines are for pets that don't turn right when you fly commercial. You have high-end hotels, and I'm talking really high-end hotels. So they not only accept pets in the rooms now, but there is a room service menu for the human and the room service menu for the doggy.
I love it. There's a business brewing in there somewhere.
There's so many
Have you seen Woolworths pet food section?
Yeah, that they own, absolutely.
No. The pet food inside a Woolworths food market. Have you seen that?
I'm boycotting Woolworths. Leave me alone.
Well, but anyway, now...
I'm actually not boycotting Woolworths like that. It's just I can't afford Woolworths anymore.
No.
Because I have to pay for school fees.
Even I do. But that, I'll come to that when I leave my tip for 2025. But basically, inside a Woolies now, there's an entire section which used to be a single shelf.
Mm.
There's now a refrigerator with pre-prepared... Yes. Dog food, and they got like chicken and rice. And I'm thinking of all the people that are like suffering poverty and things, but there's a 50 rand dish of dog food, chicken and rice, and someone's buying this. So it's crazy. You know, I read a funny article about South Korea recently where during December, which is now considered, December is one of the months you watch baby birth because you want to know who's born on New Year, who's born on Christmas, and how many babies did we have on Christmas, how many babies did we have. And South Korea, I think, recorded less than 12 births for the whole of December.
Wow.
Which is ridiculous. Japan had 6 cities with 0 births during December.
Sure. That's
Can you
incredible.
Imagine you've got the best healthcare in South Korea? You've got the best healthcare in Japan, but the entire prenatal unit is empty.
Meanwhile, in South Africa, we have 12-year-olds giving birth on the 25th of December.
True, I forgot that.
Yeah.
Timothy, you've been quiet for a long time, so I'm going to let you start with your, if you were to watch one thing in 2025, what are you watching?
So I had a friend of mine just come to South Africa for the first time. Her, she was part of a group tour. She messaged me and said, look, I'm coming to South Africa. I'll be in Johannesburg on these two nights. I was like, great, let's connect. And then I went to her social media pages and discovered she had launched a book. And I was like, dope, let's do a book launch. I surprised her.
I saw that on your LinkedIn and I was like touched.
Oh, really? Okay. So when she comes back, we're going to untouch and figure out a way to get you. So one of the guys I invited was sitting on the front row live streaming from his glasses. And it was interesting because I saw a little light flashing from his glasses. And I was like, this is interesting because, I really genuinely feel that the ability to take people into your world using wearables is going to explode. And I'm watching the technology. Dion can probably speak to this more than me, but I'm watching the technology prices for these devices drop. And I really feel the money we have been spending for kids and the money we've been spending on all these other areas are going to go towards allowing people a view into your world through travel and through experiences at conferences, in bringing people into your world. Because if you can imagine, if somebody can log on and subscribe to your a version of OnlyFans and they get to see everything you're doing through your glasses, it's going to change everything, yes. And I think even for me, when I'm doing a conference, if I'm wearing glasses and people can experience, me at a conference or wherever, I feel as though it's going to be I think the demand from the audience when they get a chance to experience it is going to put pressure on technology companies to go faster and faster and lower prices. And technology companies, I feel, are going to be okay with narrower margins because the growth is going to explode.
Tech companies exploding. I love that. Wearables.
Yeah.
Sounds like Black Mirror.
And on that, I think you must have seen, both of you must have seen, Apple launch the, what did they call it? It flopped. That's why I can't remember the name.
This giant, huge thing on your head.
That was supposed to be a personal computer. Yeah. I would have loved one, but 57,000 Rand just didn't agree with me.
Yeah.
That's not an Apple problem. That's a Rand problem.
Yeah.
No, it's an Apple problem because overseas, a lot of people said $1,000, $2,000 for this thing was ridiculous. But it was so cool because you could put your entire computer on your eyes. Not safe, but I mean, you could. And then you could work with it here, but also put things behind you and watch something here and watch something here all at the same time.
I've got a headache just thinking about it.
Yeah. So for someone like me.
So is that your 2025?
Yeah. No,
you're hoping for a cheaper version of that?
This guy had a basic Ray-Bans.
Yeah, yeah.
Just basic Ray-Bans. And I think there's a gap in that space.
Yes.
Where you can't do a million things. But the fact that he can live stream is enough. And I think that ability for somebody to be able to walk on a plane, and if you are sponsoring such and such influencer, for them to be able to walk on a plane, get in their business class seat, I mean, your value as a sponsor to that influencer is going to skyrocket with that technology. Mm. So forget about the individual's desires. Your worth goes up because I can let you into parts of my experience that holding the phone up all the time doesn't let me in on.
Sure.
True, true. But as you make technology more accessible, there's always opportunities.
Yeah.
And I think that's a nice business opportunity if you could get it right.
So what's your to watch for 2025?
My to watch is don't worry about the wars. Don't worry about the politics. Worry about your finances. Because I think this week we saw NVIDIA lose $580 billion. There are companies worth $580 billion.
The NVIDIA, CEO of NVIDIA lost 17% of his wealth.
Yeah, so I mean, that's a huge knock. And we live with these headlines and we don't realize the cost of these headlines. That it somewhere, that cost has to be absorbed. Mm. So someone got $580 billion. Someone lost $580 billion. How is that affecting the world economy? So I don't think things are going to get cheaper. I think Donald Trump will try to push for a cheaper economy for Americans, but it might not turn out that way for everyone else. And I think China is also trying to push for a cheaper economy for everyone else. South Korea and things might see collapse. Japan might see collapse economically because their population, I think their aged population now, over 80, outnumbers the young population under 20.
Wow.
Which is a ridiculous idea because it means you're going to be paying for more pensions than you're earning money and your GDP. Mm. So automatically they freaking out, I'm sure.
Last year they did already start talking about, for the first time in a very, very long time, recessionary conversations in Japan. So yeah.
Which is crazy because their inflation is ridiculous. but I think we're going to see a lot of financial suffering, which will affect you personally more than World War III, unless you get a draft notice, in which case just change your name and become an illegal alien or something, get deported somewhere. But I don't think it's going to be wars and politics this year. I think more than anything, your finances are the thing to watch.
Okay.
My thing to watch actually is linked to that. So last year, because there's always a continuum, so the trends don't just live statically in one year. We picked up a new demographic, and the acronym was ALICE, Asset Limited, Income Constrained, Employed. So these are people living in their cars because they've got a job, they've managed to buy a car, but they can no longer afford rent. And it goes back to the 30-30-30 report that we did, that some young people here in South Africa see buying groceries as a luxury. Just your normal groceries, that's a luxury to have. So fast forward to, I call it the cliffhanger of 2024, Luigi Mangione, who shoots the CEO there. There are so many trend threads within that thing. 3D printed gun, bad algorithm that deny, obfuscates and all of your claims. The minute before he was even unmasked, there was a lookalike competition there. The halo effect came in when he was unmasked. The Sherpa jacket he wore, they sold 700 in 48 hours. It's just like, this is going there. But I linked that in a column I wrote to, I called it Thirst Trap Assassins and Parmesan Bandits. Okay.
Heavy headline.
I'm going to go find that and read it. There was a lot of stuff.
That may be the byline to this particular show.
Thirst Trap Assassins and Parmesan Bandits. So on the one hand, you've got the Thirst Trap Assassin. The second one is why Parmesan Bandits? So Business Insider is noticing an uptick of middle-class people stealing Parmesan cheese. But that goes into another trend that we picked up last year, is also about the because of climate change, the cost of olive oil.
Yeah, ridiculous.
And so people put, you know, those security tags on that you put on alcohol, on olive oil, because people were shoplifting olive oil. So now it's like Parmesan. But here's my thing to watch for 2025. So the Parmesan Bandits is an umbrella for social bandits, okay? So you're doing something, but everybody cheers you on, even though it's illegal, so you can't steal. But it was interesting, the link between the two, and I said in the column, I'm not equating shooting somebody in cold blood with taking a piece of Parmesan from there. But what both things represented was a frustration with systems. So Luigi Mangione was about the system that he was caught in, and they just would not like let you go. And the other one was interesting because this was American, so it was people were – the target was Whole Foods, okay? Yeah. So upmarket, Woolies, Sainsbury's, and like that. So the whole thing was, well, it's owned by Jeff Bezos. He's just shot another thing into space. He's shooting himself into space. He's not going to
care about
the little shrinkage of that. And you're starting to see with the cost of living crisis for the past 2 years, people are justifying that the profits are too high. It's corporate greed and the social bandits. We cheer them on because
eat the rich.
Yeah,
it's the reason I don't shop at Woolworths anymore.
On that, right? Do you guys think, because both of you watch trends, both of you watch cultures and things, do you think we're seeing a dilution of morality to what is acceptable, what's no longer acceptable?
I think we've crossed the line.
Long, if you see the vulgarity we see on X, and this is why, I said seeing presidents fighting, slugging it out on X
We did watch a almost live assassination of Donald Trump. Yeah. And that was just a mere 4 months ago.
There's an interesting little twist because one of the things when I was researching this, they said in the near future, and I think maybe that's 2025, you won't really be thinking about left or right politics, but inside and outside.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the shift. But for me, it's a very, very slippery slope when you start saying, okay, here's the social bandit, and it becomes a folk hero, and it's like, you're blurring the lines.
The lines are blurred. Mm. And what an amazing, insightful conversation. And thank you, all of you, for coming and sharing your brains with me.
Thanks for holding space.
You know, this 2025 is also babies born this year at the first in the Gen Beta.
Mm.
So... is the most popular name for the Gen Beta going to be Alice? And will they grow up to be Parmesan Bandits?
Yes.
But that is, as we watch the trends, we're going to be here leveling up every week, watching the trends, having the conversation. And I think most importantly for me coming out of this conversation is next week when I watch the president in his State of the Nation.
Yes.
I'm thinking a lot about what we're talking about. And the week thereafter when we're watching the budget. Let's see.
Yeah.
But thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you. Awesome.